So I say this to the militias and all others who believe that the greatest threat to freedom comes from the government instead of from those who would take away our freedom. If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, there is no freedom.
They'll never take our freedom!
There are too many guns on the street. We lose 93 million Americans a day to gun violence.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Freedom Rings. This is Tommy Freedom reaching you loud and clear on the alt-right frontier. I'll be your voice of reason for the next 30 minutes, so keep it right here. You are tuned in on the TFR Radio Network, broadcasting to you from a log cabin in a secret mountaintop location somewhere in Appalachia on White America Radio. Hey folks, it is Tommy Freedom. I want to welcome you back to another 30 minutes of Freedom Rings. Folks, have you ever had like an almost situation where something almost happened that could have been absolutely disastrous and by the grace of God it didn't happen? Well, that happened to me yesterday morning. I was driving up the interstate. I was getting ready to start one of my routes. And I've been running about 72 miles an hour all the way up the interstate for about, 20 miles or so. And about a mile and a half from the exit that I was going to get off on, I started noticing this roar coming from somewhere under the car. And it was a noise that was unfamiliar to me. So I turned off the radio and I listened. And it sounded like it was coming from the front passenger tire, that wheel. And I noticed there was a little bit of a shimmy in the steering wheel, but I couldn't figure it out. I never heard anything like that before. And I changed lanes, and for a split second, the noise stopped. So I tried turning the wheel a little to the left. It stopped for a split second. To the right, it stopped for a split second. So I'm thinking, geez, you know, there's something really, something isn't right with my car. Understatement, folks. Got off at the exit, went over the bridge, got up to where my route starts, pulled over, got out and checked that wheel, and one lug nut was gone. Two more had backed out a quarter of an inch, and the last one that was holding everything in place when I put the tire iron to it did turn. It was starting to come loose as well. So apparently my lug nuts had come loose, and this roar was coming from the fact that the entire wheel was vibrating. If I'd have gone another 5 miles up the interstate, the entire wheel would have fallen off the car. It would have dove down at about 72 miles an hour, and who knows what could have happened. I could have turned over, could have gone in the lake. No telling. It's just one of those things. I will say this. From here on out, it's a sound I'd never heard before, and one that I will remember for the rest of my life. If I ever hear that sound again and feel something, a vibration in the steering wheel, I will know immediately to pull off to the side of the road. So I tightened the three remaining lug nuts up as snug as I could get them and did the first part of my route and crossed over the interstate. And on the way, I stopped at an auto parts store and I ordered two lug nuts because one was missing and another one that was there had inadvertently gotten switched when my tire was being worked on at some point, and it was like one of those half-open lug nuts. Don't like those. You can't reach them. I got those full acorn lug nuts. So I ordered two of them, and I told the guy what had happened. And he said, "Who's mad at you?" And I didn't really realize what he was saying at the time. In other words, who's trying to kill you by loosening your lug nuts? And I said, "Me," because I had changed the brakes a couple of weeks ago. And he said, "Well, who put them on, or who put that back on?" I said, "I did." I said, "Apparently it was my fault. I really don't think anybody's trying to kill me. I really do think it came down to the fact that I had a problem with those particular brakes because they were completely gone. And I spent an hour trying to get the new pads in on that one particular side. One would not go in. And then I finally realized that there were still broken parts in there, got them out, finally got it put back together. It was like 90 degrees out, just sweating profusely, completely exhausted and worn out at that point. So I'm quite confident that it was my fault that I did not sock the lug nuts down as tightly as I should have, being dehydrated and weakened like that. But good lesson to learn. Something I will definitely not do again. But yeah, that's one of those things. You know, sometimes it almost happens and it doesn't. And you're just so fortunate to have someone looking over your shoulder and to keep you safe. So to start the day out, I almost lost my wheel at 70 miles an hour on the interstate. And then later on in the morning, I ran over a squirrel. It ran right out in front of me. It had a big old pecan in its mouth. And it just stopped and stood there and heard a kwang as something on the underside of the car hit it, and then the familiar ka-thump as the wheels ran it over. You what? No, George, I didn't bring it home for you. No, it's a tree rat, and I was not going to keep it in the car for another 4 hours just to bring it home so that you could play with it. Anyway, it's been a long time since I've run something over. I think the last time I ran something over, it was a big old tomcat, and I was in my girlfriend's car at the time. I really did not mean to. I was trying to slam on the brakes, but it didn't quite make it. But when I was driving a tractor and trailer, I ran over a few things. I was following a truck one night coming out of the Lowe's supply yard, and all of a sudden, in a split second, it looked like a branch with a bunch of brown dead leaves on it, except it was screaming. And it went under my truck, and I felt my trailer tires hit it, and whatever it was at that point, it was dead. So I got on the CB, and I said, "Driver, what did I just run over?" He said, "I think it was a dog." He said, "Whatever it was, it ran out in front of me." So whatever it was brown and it was screaming. We both figure it was a dog. I don't think it was a Negro, but in all likelihood, it was in fact a dog. And one time I ran over a skunk. I saw it come running out in front of me. I was coming down through the mountains, and ironically, it was in front of a friend of mine's house that I'd gone to high school with, my best friend. He's like my foster brother. And just ironically, in front of his house up in the mountains in this little town, this black and white thing came out in front of me, but it was squatting low like a badger. So I was pretty sure it was a skunk. And couldn't do anything. I was carrying a full load of water heaters from American Water Heaters. And I hit it. And when I got back down to the supply yard and dropped the trailer, I could smell the odor of skunk. So I was fairly certain it was a skunk and not a cat. So about a week later, I was talking to my friend. I said, "Oh, by the way, did anybody run over a skunk in front of your house last week?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "It was the first warm night of the season. We're laying there with the window open." And he said, "It was drifting right through." I said, "Well, it ran out in front of my truck, and I was hoping it wasn't a cat. I was thinking it was a skunk." He said, "Oh, yeah, it was a skunk, all right." So things like that do happen. But enough of talking about running over things. This is going to be kind of a death-themed show, though. And you know why. You know about the two suicides that we had over the past week between Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain. And I just want to talk a little bit about that. What goes on in someone's mind? What actually pushes them to that point? Have you ever been to that point? Have you ever been that depressed that you have contemplated that? Now, there's a lot of people that suffer from depression. Sometimes it has to do with mental illness. Sometimes it has to do with stress. Sometimes it has to do with something completely different. And in my early adulthood, I did struggle for a while with some depression, and it was not mental illness. It was not stress-related. It was something that you will never believe. But I will share that story with you after I get into it with the story of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain. I will tell you, though, and you'll never believe what the cause of mine was, and the fix was so simple, you wouldn't believe it. So the first one I want to talk about is Kate Spade, because she went first. And we still don't know what's really going on with her. She did leave a suicide note. She was 55 years old. She left a suicide note that references her daughter and her husband, whose name is Andy Spade, who is comedian David Spade's brother. So she was actually David Spade's sister-in-law. That in and of itself might be enough to make you want to commit suicide, but it's really, I don't know, it boggles the mind here. You have no idea what she was worth. I'm going to give this to you. She's 55 years old, okay? So she started Kate Spade, New York, back in 1993, and opened up her first shop about 3 years later, and she started out designing handbags. And she started out with just six, and then she continued redesigning everything and came out with something that was completely unique, and she had made a really good name for herself. And Kate Spade, New York, currently has more than 140 retail shops and outlet stores across the United States and more than 175 stores internationally. That's nothing to sneeze at. But back in 1999, she and her husband Andy sold a little over half, about 56% of the brand to Neiman Marcus for a tidy little sum of $33.6 million. That, my friends, is certainly nothing to sneeze at. That's a good chunk of change. And then later on, Liz Claiborne acquired the company in 2007, and she just kind of left the brand altogether. Now, the company that used to be known as Coach Handbags, in May of 2017, bought out Kate Spade for, get this, $2.4 billion. That's with a B, folks. $2.5 billion. So apparently sometimes money does not buy happiness. But it is certainly a shame. It really is. When you have that kind of money, certainly there's got to be something that you can do with that money to bring some sort of happiness to your life. Hell, I'd even buy a lot of heroin just to keep yourself doped up, but to hang yourself like she did, it's a shame. And so many people take their lives every day, and of course we know about the 20 veterans a day is what the average is that take their lives that have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's certainly a shame in and of itself as well. But mental health issues a lot of times go undiagnosed. And a lot of people say, well, there were no signs. Well, there were. And let me tell you something, folks. If you've got a friend or a loved one, and all of a sudden they start giving away a lot of cherished items, that is a huge sign that they are about to take their own lives. So if all of a sudden you get something that was your grandmother's from, say, a brother or a sister that had gotten it, and they give it to you, and then they start giving you other things, and other family members start getting things, that's when you need to take action. You need to sit down and talk to them and ask them how they're doing and try and intervene and see if there's something that you can do. Because the last thing that you want to do is to lose someone like that. It's bad enough when someone is murdered or they die in a car crash, but for them to intentionally take their own life and find out after the fact that maybe perhaps there was something that could have avoided that and stopped it and prevented it, that leaves you with a huge weight on your shoulders, always thinking, was there something I could have done if only I'd seen the signs? Well, folks, there are signs, and you can go online and you can find out what the top signs are for someone who is contemplating suicide. Actually, producer George has found it for me. So this is from, let's see, what's this from, George? Suicide.org. And this is the suicide warning signs. It says, if you or someone you know exhibits several of the suicide warning signs listed below, immediate action is required. So please read the information on the homepage of this website and take action. Now, there's a whole slew of them here. Suicide warning signs. Appearing depressed or sad most of the time. Untreated depression is the number one cause for suicide. Talking or writing about death or suicide. Withdrawing from family and friends. Feeling hopeless. Feeling helpless. Feeling strong anger or rage. Feeling trapped, like there's no way out of a situation. Experiencing dramatic mood changes. Abusing drugs or alcohol. Exhibiting a change in personality, acting impulsively, losing interest in most activities, experiencing a change in sleeping habits, experiencing a change in eating habits, losing interest in most activities, performing poorly at work or in school, giving away prized possessions, and that was the one that I discussed earlier, is the number one sign to look for, folks. Writing a will, feeling excessive guilt or shame, or acting recklessly. And it goes on to say here, it should be noted that some people who die by suicide do not show any suicide warning signs. But about 75% of those who die by suicide do exhibit some suicide warning signs. So we need to be aware of what the suicide warning signs are and try and spot them in people. If we see someone exhibiting suicide warning signs, we need to do everything that we can to help them. If you or someone you know exhibits several of the suicide warning signs listed above, immediate action is required. So please read the information on the homepage of this website and take action. Okay, as it said above. That's very interesting stuff, folks. That goes above and beyond some of the stuff that I was aware of. So again, if you or anyone you know is exhibiting these signs or you're feeling these things, do something about it. If a loved one is acting this way, talk to them about it. If you are feeling this way, then for God's sakes, talk to someone about it. Get treatment. Sometimes talking to someone can help so much, because it's not always mental illness. And in my case, it was not. It was something as simple, and after the break, I'll get into this, it was something as simple as a chiropractic adjustment that fixed me. It can be that easy, folks. I gotta take a break here. I'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk about my situation and that of Anthony Bourdain. So stick around.
From now, my kids will be outnumbered. Are you going to let that happen? Don't leave the mess for your children to clean up. Join the struggle. Start here at KKK Radio.
Gay Pride Days, school assemblies, posters on the wall. It's in our face every day. What's a white Christian teen to do? And does anyone really care? Listen each week to White Youth Focus, where teens discuss the propaganda war against them. Moderated by caring and thoughtful white Christian activists, Billy and Charity. Because it's okay to be white and proud.
College students, high school students, business owners, entrepreneurs, learn how you can be a person of influence for a new America. Enroll in Soldiers of the Cross Training Institute. Learn more at www.sotctraininginstitute.com.
Georgetown Law professor Louis Michael Seidman says that the U.S. Constitution is archaic and downright evil. And people like this are teaching in America's law schools? It's frightening. Well, here's your chance to listen to one attorney who stands on principle and fights for the dreams of freedom-loving Americans. Listen to Jason Robb, host of Cross Examine, each week right here on KKK Radio.
Hey folks, Tommy Freedom here for Freedom Rings. I invite you to tune in every week and listen to my show, Freedom Rings, and hear what I, Tommy Freedom, have to say. It's usually pretty interesting and quite informative. It may have something to do with freedom, it may have something to do with liberty. It may be downright funny, but it will always be informative. So be sure and tune in each week to listen to me, Tommy Freedom, here on my show at Freedom Rings, broadcasting to you loud and clear on KKK Radio. I reviewed the bumper before I just automatically played it. George, having no clue about anything whatsoever, had scheduled the bumper to be Make Me Wanna Die by the Pretty Reckless. And since we're talking about suicide, George, that would not have been very cool. So at least I found that ahead of time, got it changed out to something a little bit more appropriate. Seventh son of a seventh son. Something a little bit more uplifting and biblical and dealing with God and eternal life and not just death in and of itself. But anyway, getting back into the stories I wanted to share with you here, of course, the next one is going to be about Anthony Bourdain, because while most of us have probably never heard of Kate Spade, we have all heard of Anthony Bourdain. We've watched his shows on TV, perhaps you had read his book, but I think No Reservations was the show that really put him on the map, and he was currently doing another one, but there were a lot of signs. Now, he hanged himself with a bathrobe belt. The medical examiner has ruled that it was a suicide. There was no foul play involved. It was not an accident. It was done on purpose. But he had struggled for years with problems with drugs and alcohol. And he had himself said, in his own words, that he was battling demons. Now, folks, let me just clue you in on something. If you're ever talking to someone or someone posts on Facebook or on something like that, that they have demons to slay or something along those lines, that is a code word for an addiction. It could be drugs, it could be alcohol. It doesn't matter what it is. But if someone says that they're battling demons or they have demons to kill or demons to slay, it means that they do have an addiction that they are struggling with. They realize that it's there, but it's always referred to as demons. But there were five warning signs, apparently, that people were starting to notice. Now, the first one, again, he hanged himself, which, of course, was a huge warning sign, you think, folks? I'm taking this out of an article here. Number one, how did Anthony Bourdain die? Yeah, he hung himself. That's beyond a warning sign. But, all right, let's deal with the other four. It says right here, number two was that he had struggled with drug addiction. And it says here that he never tried to hide his past with his drug addiction. In fact, he even joked about it during a 2016 appearance during a promotional tour of one of his books. And when one of the audience members asked about how he could get Bourdain's job, he replied, "Drop out of college. Don't concentrate. Do a lot of cocaine and heroin." Wow, that's pretty strong, folks. And it goes on to say that, joking aside, he revealed in Well Simple that drugs were, in fact, a big part of his motivation growing up. And he says, "I was aware I had far less money at my disposal than just about everyone I went to school with. My friends could afford weed and cocaine. That was certainly a motivator. Maybe a bad one, but not an unimportant one. My friends could afford drugs, I could not. They would share, but of course the thing about cocaine is that you can never have enough." And he apparently also admitted to using heroin until the 1980s. And he went on to say that friends of mine from the 70s and 80s, they just got off 5, 6, maybe 10 years ago. And we're the lucky ones. We made it out alive. There were a lot of guys that didn't get that far, but you know, I also didn't have that many regrets either. So maybe the drugs didn't kill him, but maybe in a way they did. Number three was that he may have had depression. Will you think? According to a Parts Unknown episode that visited Buenos Aires, Argentina, Anthony Bourdain had visited a psychotherapist, and he said, "Argentina has the distinction of being home to more head shrinkers per capita than anywhere else in the world. I need someone to talk to." And he then went on to visit a therapist and talked about his relationship with food and how it sometimes would send him into a depression. And he said, "I would find myself in an airport, for instance, and I'll order an airport hamburger. It's an insignificant thing. It's a small thing. It's a hamburger, but it's not a good one. Suddenly, I look at the hamburger and I find myself in a spiral of depression that can last for days." Now, folks, that's not right. I mean, you're getting a burger that's not up to your par and you get depressed for eating it? No. Number four says he felt alone. And in that same Buenos Aires episode of Parts Unknown, he admitted to his therapist that he felt like a freak. And he further explained that he felt isolated. I communicate for a living, but I'm terrible with communicating with people I care about. I'm good with my daughter. An 8-year-old is about my level of communication skills, so that works out. But beyond, I'm really terrible. Wow, what a horrible thing that you can't communicate with people like that, and you communicate for a living. Now, that's kind of like myself. I am horribly, I'm not going to say reclusive, but I am very introverted. And how ironic it is that I became an actor, a public speaker, and a politician, and doing this radio show. So sometimes the opposite kind of takes over, and I've been able to handle it fine, but apparently he could not. And number 5 was that he was a self-diagnosed narcissistic. There's really not a whole lot in here that really makes a lot of sense, but those are the 5 signs that apparently he had given out that were leading to the fact that perhaps there was something going on in his life that was horribly wrong. I got a few minutes left here, so let me share with you my experience with depression and how I ultimately overcame it. In my late teens and early 20s, I felt very alone. I was very introverted, so I was not able to meet women like I am now, where I just go out and flirt with everyone and have absolutely no problem with that. I was very, very lonely, and I was very depressed. I just wanted to be with someone. And it just gnawed at me night and day, and it just got progressively worse. And I remember being back at my mom's house in my hometown for Christmas. And it was Christmas Eve, and I was feeling very, very despondent, and I was upstairs in the bedroom looking out the window, and my mom came up and said, "Why don't you come down?" And I said, "I don't feel like it." And she looked at me, and she said, "But Tommy, it's Christmas Eve." And it didn't register. It meant absolutely nothing to me. I did not care. But folks, I was not suffering from mental illness. You see, I got hit by a couple of cars early on in my 20s. And it gave me some damage to my back, which I've since been able to work through over the years, but it required years of chiropractic adjustments. And one day, I was installing baseboard, because I was a contractor, and it had compressed one of my discs so bad that I was literally paralyzed. I was walking in slow motion. So I went to my chiropractor for a routine chiropractic adjustment. And he adjusted my back, and then he adjusted my neck, and he cracked my atlas loose. And the atlas is the cervical, your cervical spine, but you get the bone, the individual bones. It slips me at the moment. But anyway, so at the very top, your brainstem actually goes down there. And it was off just ever so slightly, and it was putting pressure on my brainstem, which affects your mood. And for all those years, that bone had been slightly out of alignment and was the cause of my depression. And as soon as he cracked my neck, it moved the atlas and all the pressure came off of my brainstem, and I could instantly feel it just drain away. And within 3 minutes, I was the same as I had been as a child, the same as I am today. So not all depression is caused by mental illness. It can be something as simple as having a chiropractic adjustment. And that's my story. It's one I wanted to share with you because I have gone through very similar things, feeling very despondent. It was not my fault, but again, it was not mental illness. Don't always look at this as mental illness because it can be something else. So on that note, my friends, I am just about out of time here. As always, if you want to get in touch with me, you may do so by emailing me at TommyFreedomRings@yahoo.com. Until next week, my friends, this has been Tommy Freedom for Freedom Rings. Out for now. Be safe, be well, and if you think you have a problem, please get some help.